Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, this will be interesting, huh?
Yeah, I'm super excited.
How was your weekend?
It was pretty good.
Any had a good injuries?
Time. No injuries. I'm excited. It's Monday, best day of the week.
The last week you went to Disney.
I did.
Run a marathon. Half marathon.
I did.
Nothing special this weekend?
No running? No
recovery?
Running this weekend. Yeah.
Recovery
I guess
weekend.
Still recovering. Yeah. But planning to run another half marathon soon because it was a lot of fun. So
cool.
Yeah.
All right. So first up on Atlanta Business Radio, we got Steve Damereau, and he is the Grand Poobah with Incentive Solutions and Loyalty Works. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Lee.
Can you tell us a little bit about Incentive Solutions and Loyalty Works? What are you doing for folks?
Well, we've been in business for 25 years here in Atlanta. The best way to describe it is, I guess everybody's heard of Salesforce. So Salesforce.com. Salesforce.com is a CRM. They've somewhat hijacked the term CRM. People have forgotten what it means. It actually means customer relationship management. So what we do, and we have morphed into this, we basically have created a customer relationship management platform for a business-to-business platform. So in other words, 80% of the American economy is operated through an indirect sales force. So what we do is we create a platform where manufacturers or distributors can manage their platform, or rather their communications with their dealers or distributors.
So now you customize it for each individual organization?
Well, actually, that's the beauty of it. It's templated. It's configurable. So it's inexpensive. It's easy to implement and it's easy to operate. So it's the entry level is very easy to get into.
So can you give me an example about how it works? So like what would be an example of a company that has a distributed sales force?
Well, we have about 220 clients. We sign confidentiality agreements with all of them.
Right. You don't have to name their names, but just like, okay, this is a manufacturer. This is a, you know, sales training or whatever their group is.
It could be a tire manufacturer that sells through tire dealers. You know, all tires are round and black.
Right.
So what's the difference? Well, you depend upon that salesperson to tell you which tire that you need. And there's an element of trust. That salesperson was probably trained, and they could have been trained on our system. We're actually not a learning management company, but we can host the learning management systems. So they might have been trained, and then they might have been incentivized to sell a particular tire or a particular brand within a tire. And one might be a higher margin. So one might be the new and up and coming. It could be a HVAC company who has a new, more improved, more efficient air conditioning system that they want to encourage their dealers to push. There's new technology out with the HVA systems, which they call split systems, which are really very cool. I like promoting those things. We actually represent about six of those manufacturers. So very often we deal in certain verticals because we start to gain unique perspective from the client's perspective in terms of understanding their business.
Are some of the verticals that you work in?
Any vertical that deals in a distributor-dealer network, but it tends to be, it could be anything from pharmaceuticals to building materials. So there's probably about 10 or 12 verticals that we deal in. And most of the business that we get is through referrals.
And that's from people within the industry, or one of the people that are part of that vertical will tell one of their colleagues?
What tends to happen is we're dealing with the VPs of sales and VPs of marketing. And if they leave one company, they tend to bring us with them and go to another one, you know. We also do a lot of shows like this radio show. We do a lot of articles. So we do very, very, very heavy in SEO. But it's more of a thought leadership situation versus a pay-per-click. So we're recognized in the industry as basically being in the forefront.
So now, what are some of the ways that you can incent a sales force? Have you learned that over the years, that some things work better than others?
Well, they all have, and it doesn't matter if they're selling pharmaceuticals or if they're selling roofing shingles. It's all what's in it for them. And the whole key is to make it simple for them to understand, simple for them to be a part of, and simple for the corporate sponsor to administer. And that's what our platform allows them to do. It's all on the same dashboard. We've taken the process, which used to take about 3 to 6 months, and we've narrowed it down to just a couple of weeks.
Now you can go in and kind of help the organization come up with a good plan, because like as we've seen with some banking companies on the other side of the country, their bad incentives can lead to bad outcomes.
Well, you know, that's a really good question, actually. You know, I personally believe that corporate culture is paramount. And one of the things I enjoy about being in this business is learning about their respective businesses. And I think that their dealers and their participants recognize a higher purpose. And I think that most of our clients recognize that. I think you're alluding to a bank, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's frankly, that was quite dirty pool.
Well, they had an incentive program that at some point it maybe it made sense, but over the years it was kind of gamed so that, non great outcomes were happening.
Well, actually their incentive program was a compensation program.
Right.
So they were compensated for something. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about here is there are basically three stools to incentive program. The one that everybody looked at first was what were the rewards. So in the old days, you used to have a paper catalog or something of that nature, and you have 1,100 items. Well, now we function as an aggregator, very similar to Amazon, and we have over 15 million items, plus 255 gift cards, plus debit cards, plus event tickets and travel. So there are all sorts of studies out and statistics that show that non-cash compensation and training are much more important to keeping employees and dealer salespeople engaged than cash.
Not the Cadillac and steak knife incentive program? The old days?
Well, that went out with the Cadillac.
So now, are these sales programs, are they kind of geared toward a specific event or a time, or is this something that's ongoing that they just collect points over time and they can cash them in whenever they want? Or
There's a fundamental difference between an incentive program and a loyalty program. So a lot of people get them confused. A loyalty program is, let's take a large airline here in Atlanta. Okay, so they have a loyalty program. So all things being similar, I am going to stick with that respective airline because I'm on their loyalty program. I'm not actually going to take a flight because I want those miles, but all things being similar, I will be loyal to them and buy a ticket from them. Mm-hmm. An incentive program has a entry point and an exit. For 3 months, it's going to be this. For 6 months, it's going to be this. Maybe even a year. But generally speaking, the incentive program is what I call the CFO program. That means this is the one that actually moves the sales needle, moves the profit needle. And this is the one that the CFO is actually going to be pushing because it is where the middle 60% are actually creating additional values in terms of sales or profit.
Now, when you have an incentive program, how do you protect yourself against the people that aren't doing great at the beginning and kind of lose interest or that think that, oh, forget it, I'm never going to make this. So then it's not, they stop, it becomes a kind of a disincentive.
Well, that's also another great question. Right now, and I share all sorts of statistics, but the fact of the matter is that everybody functions on their smartphone. And what we were one of the first to do was to migrate all this from paper to the web, and now it's all on the smartphone. Mm-hmm. Because of that, we have constant communications with these people, and we can put them into what we call leaderboards, we can put them into categories. And because these platforms are now built on a CSS system versus hard-coded, they're very easy to switch and change around. So you actually can have multiple incentive programs within the context of a general incentive program. So the key here is that an incentive program is a living, breathing organism that changes all the time, and you have to be able to change with it. So if you are doing something wrong, based upon your key performance indicators, then you're basically going to have to switch it around.
And then your platform enables that to happen pretty easily?
Almost immediately, simultaneously. It's something that people can do on their own, or they just call one of our account managers and they take care of it for them.
And that's something that like the end user or the salesperson might have their own dashboard, but the administrator has a different, more robust dashboard that allows them to make these kind of changes?
Absolutely. So they have the 30,000 foot perspective versus the ground level.
And then typically in the organization, who is the one that's administered? Is this you have to be technical, or is this a sales manager administrating it?
We have some clients that this is their only job.
It's just administrating this.
It's just administrating this. It is in the old days, frankly, people created incentive programs when they had a problem. Now, because of the technology, I maintain that it should be part of your actual marketing plan before you actually have the program. Case in point, there's all sorts of statistics out there that if I send you an email, it can have an open rate of around 14%. If I create some type of incentive program along with that email, that open rate goes to around 35%. If I send you a text message and I say, if you do the following exam on your phone, it's going to take you 5 minutes, and I'm going to give you an electronic gift card for $50 that you can have on your phone instantaneously. So it's the Pavlovian aspect, the amount of reward, time takes to get reward are directly related. So if I can reduce the amount of hassle involved with getting a reward, I can actually give less of a reward and have a better benefit. So now once you have a text message and you have an instant incentive program associated with it, it goes up to 96%. So what's happened is you've gone up from around 16% to 96%.
Now, are there, I've heard the word gamification used in some of these things. Is there a gamification element that's part of your stuff as well?
Yes. You've got to keep it young, hip. You got to have people want to get involved, not just for the rewards, but rather for the social media aspect. So there's a complete social media aspect to it. And there's a gamification aspect to it. So it's very much in line with both Facebook and Twitter and all the types of things that motivate now the vast majority of people directly on their smartphones.
Now, are there some things that are that stand the test of time in terms of incentives? Like, is travel always something that is going to be something that gets people excited about, or is that kind of cyclical?
Well, it is cyclical. And we started off as a traditional travel incentive company. Basically, we were just glorified travel agents. And then we morphed into this in 2008. The problem with travel is one, it does appeal to just the top 10%. So what happens to that rest of the 90, and what happens to that middle 60 that actually can move the needle? That's where you actually can have multiple incentives. So we have clients that might have one incentive that is aimed at their dealer principals. It might be a trip to Hawaii, which we just operated. And then at the same time, they might have another incentive program that is more points-oriented, that is aimed at their dealer salespeople. And then you might have another incentive program that's aimed at the dealer parts counter. So you can have multiple incentives. The difference between travel and the merchandise or frankly money is that it appeals to a higher echelon. So the Maslow's hierarchy, when you get up to the top, you get into altruism, you get into ego, and the travel is more appealing to those that are already on the top, that ego inflation is much more of an incentive than the actual reward or money is.
Now, you've been doing this for a little bit, and you've been seeing kind of a change in how a lot of this is delivered because of the use of technology. Can you share maybe something that has been meaningful for you in seeing that this really make a difference in companies?
Well, obviously, the most important thing is return on investment. And our clients have been averaging between 250 and 400% return on their investment. We have one of the things within our platform is that we actually have testimonials from the participants. And once again, getting into marketing, you know, advertising has its place, but people are much more willing and much more likely to act and trust a testimonial from one of their peers than they are from any amount of advertising. And so what we do is we solicit those type of testimonials and referrals through these programs.
Now, when you're working with a customer and they are getting the results, is this something that they just keep doing over and over again? Or could, you can't keep running the same program over and over, can you?
You can't keep running the same program, but you can always have a new and improved program. Our client retention ratio is 99%. So they wouldn't be keep on doing it if it wasn't working. But programs can get stale. And so I think that there needs to be continual relaunches. We have quarterly meetings with our clients where we go over some key performance indicators, and we have all sorts of graphs. And my managers are also certified as return on investment specialists by the ROI Institute in Birmingham, Alabama. So it's a 1 week long course on how to create return on investment and how to measure that.
Yeah, Jack and Patty Phillips.
And so I didn't go to it because I think it's I think my ADD would have kicked in real fast. But I am very proud of those within the organization that did stick it out and did get the certification.
But that's important that you are looking at the ROI of things, and there's things in the platform that kind of trigger, hey, this is may not be doing what we want it to do. Let's reassess. And the platform's nimble enough to make those kind of course corrections?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing that I ask my clients is, in your mind's eye, in a perfect world, how would you define this as being a success? So you have to understand, okay, what is it that would make it a success? And very candidly, what is it that will make it a failure? And I can tell you right now, and everybody out there in radio land, that the single most important thing for the success and the failure of these programs is that there has to be an internal corporate champion. If there's not an internal corporate champion, then all the efforts that you put into creating this thing, if it's not maintained, it basically will die a slow death.
Right. So you have to get somebody that believes in it and that's willing to kind of stick with it for a little bit.
Absolutely. And then, of course, from a staffing standpoint, of course, a lot of our clients, or all our clients, you know, they also have all sorts of other issues that they have to address. And when they move people around, it becomes important that there's a continuity. We have one client where we've had the business for about 12 years now, and there's been 8 different corporate champions. Fortunately, they've all gotten better. But we've been the common denominator. When the new corporate champion comes on, we actually have to train he or she.
Right. You have to keep them trained up.
Yep.
Now, for you, is this how you do your sales and marketing through the same, you use your own programs and platform?
Yeah. And we use CRM too. We use Salesforce. But we don't do any outbound marketing whatsoever.
So it's all internal, serving the people that are serving you and just giving them great service and a great product.
I made the decision when I bought LoyaltyWorks in 2008. Basically, they had about 13 overpaid elderly salespeople. I will call them elderly.
Senior, veteran.
Seniors that basically did not understand the technology, didn't understand where it could go. I gave them all about a year to try to figure it out, and I only kept one. Now that my average age of my salesperson is, I have one that's been with me for 25 years, so obviously he's over than 35, but my average salesperson is under 30. And the reason being is because, very candidly, the millennials understand the application for this platform much better than baby boomers.
And then so they can go and they can do the service that these people need kind of on demand through the platform.
Through the platform, absolutely.
So what's the pain a company's having where your incentive solutions are the solution?
Well, the economy is, in my opinion, very good right now. If you can't make money in this economy right now, there's something fundamentally wrong with your business model. But the economy has limped around over the last 10 to 15 years, depending upon who you listen to, and GDP growth has been around 2 to 3%. Well, your CFO wants more than a 2 to 3% growth. So how are you going to get that if you're in a mature market? And there's not a lot of product differentiation between one manufacturer's product and another manufacturer's product. So obviously you have to have good service, you have to have good relationship, but how do you create that milieu, that environment where you have the good service and the good relationship? Well, you want a platform. You want a platform that surveys the people. You want a platform that trains the people. You want a platform that will allow you to determine which one of your inside salespeople are pushing the corporate line and objective and those that are not. And you then create a differentiation for your client that their product is not able to do. Namely, they're easier to work with. Your incentive program is easier to understand. It's more rewarding. It's more fun to play. And that creates the difference. And so all things being equal, someone will buy from someone that they enjoy doing business with and are having fun with it and get rewarded for it versus somebody that's not.
Now, is this platform a software as a service?
It is software as a service. It's constantly getting updated. And that's the beauty when you have the 220 clients. When you add another client and they want something that's customized, then everybody else benefits from that.
All right. So if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best coordinates?
Well, we have two brand names that we work under. One is loyaltyworks.com. That's loyaltyworks.com. And then the second one is incentivesolutions.com. Incentivesolutions.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Next up, what do you think? Who should I go next? Let's.
I don't know. It's a toss-up.
All right. Let's start with Justin Walker with Friendly Human. Welcome, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
Caroline just breathed a sigh of relief. She can learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely.
So what's happening in your world, Justin? What's Friendly Human doing for folks?
So Friendly Human, the easiest way to explain what we do is we're a video production company. That's what our product is. But we say that we're persuasive storytelling experts.
So storytelling is an important component?
It's the most critical part of our business. And we make sure every day that we are serving our clients by whatever stories that they have to tell or what messaging they're trying to get out there, that we do it through authenticity, through people. So we're focusing on delivering a message by a person, not so much a pitch or a script that's been prefabricated. We do some
not
of that.
Not a mission statement.
Right.
We don't do mission statement with kind of...
Well, I mean, we would display the mission statement of a company through people's own words, if that makes sense.
Sure. Now, how'd you get into this?
So, actually, my best friend, Daniel Roberts, started Friendly Human back in 2009. And we were good friends at the time. And about 4 or 5 years after that, I came on board full-time.
Were you a videographer?
I actually did. I'm one of the few people at Friendly Human that actually went to school for videography.
So how do you find talent? Are they videographers? Are they storytellers? Are they English majors? Philosophy majors?
Yeah, we protect our brand and our culture ferociously. And so we are hiring for a few specific things, and that's hospitality, self-starting people, and just really, really focusing on the culture of being a friendly human. Mm-hmm. And that's extremely critical to us. So yes, we do have videographers, and we also have people that are good at storytelling and more on the creative side of that kind of thing. So we have the creatives and then the executors that actually go out and do the work.
So now take me through kind of the process when a person, a company, or is it solopreneurs? It can be anybody. Is your company, or do you work with large companies only, or who? What's the profile of it?
Primarily, we work with established companies, just because inherently video production is costly. Mm-hmm. But we work with pretty much anybody. If there's a good fit there, whether it's financially or culturally, both of those are very important to us. We want to be able to make things work, but we definitely only align with companies that are making the world a better place, hence the name Friendly Human.
Right.
We've come up with some other names. If we start another business, we might go with. But if the general way that something kind of gets started is that someone has a need. Video production's always been extremely tactical. It's been, oh, I have an event and I need to tell my audience that we have this event. Here's a recap from it. Or oh, I'm launching a new website, so I need to create a brand film behind, that's on the background of this new, this new page that we've made. And so we had a lot in the early days, we had a lot of tactical responses to video. And now it's getting more and more into that we see that production level is not from a quality standpoint, from an involvement standpoint, is going down, and there's more deliverables being served more frequently to the audience because the audience is consuming shorter bits of content more continuously.
So that's your belief, that people watch shorter and shorter videos?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been a Friendly Human going on 5 years now. And when we started, we were making 3 minute videos.
And then what are you doing now?
Now it's 45 to 90 seconds. Really? If it's over 90 seconds, the data and anybody in the business that's in the marketing space where we are, you know, the movie industry, of course, is different, but they're going to tell you the exact same thing. After 90 seconds, your views are going downhill quick.
And then, so then you're separating a marketing video from just video in general.
Yeah, so we consider that we're in the video marketing space. So anything that's visual that can be used internally and externally. A lot of our biggest clients actually are internal communication. So a lot of employee branding initiatives that are happening inside of big companies, and we find that what is happening, and this has kind of been a discovery process for us over the course of the years, is that the storytelling that we were doing once for outbound marketing for these big companies, for them to kind of tell the world what they were doing, whether it was around, you know, corporate social responsibility or sustainability, those kinds of things, also was needed to be done internally inside the company. So we're really a voice to tell other employees, for example, so a lot of talent acquisition type work. So what is it like being an employee here?
Right.
What is it like,
The time metrics are still the same, and that even though that's all voluntary, people should be hungry for that information. Still, it's 45 to 90 seconds.
We are still seeing the exact same trends. Imagine if you are looking for a job and you're out searching on Monster or something like that for all these job postings. You're looking for, I'm not probably misspeaking here, but that clickbait type thumbnail that gets you to get onto the landing page. Once you make it to that page for a company, say in the talent acquisition space, you might get a little bit longer, but of a view. But it's still to get people the content that we're making always has a version that's in that shorter space. Especially now in the social media world, where several platforms such as Instagram only allow up to 1 minute videos.
Right.
So we do see some places where you can get 3 minute videos still to be viewed closer to the end, but it is rare.
Now, how do you go about the storytelling, kind of the arcs of story in that short time frame?
Yeah, so we, you could kind of think of the hero's journey as a, you know, something that's been talked about and you probably learned about in school, and lots of people kind of understand that and the, you know, the story arc around that. We've kind of developed our own over the years that we've adopted from several organizations and people that are smarter and much more talented than us. As we always like to give them the credit, but pretty much what we have done is we've developed a way that takes people from two different levels of thought or levels of being that you could think of. Is that where are people today when they click the play button? And then where do we want that person in the audience, the viewer, to be when they finish watching the video?
Right.
And so along the way, we take them to each level several different times. So it's kind of like...
In 45 seconds.
In 45 seconds, yes.
So just through imagery?
It can be through imagery. It can also be through the things that are being talked about. I mean, 45 seconds is...
How many words is 45 seconds? Not even 100 words?
Yeah, it's like right at 100 words.
So in 100 words, you're going to three different kind of psychological points,
yes,
and movements.
And that is the challenge in our space as we get shorter and shorter.
Right.
And of course, it in, say...
But doesn't that force you to lean more on the video, more show and less tell?
More on the visual, absolutely right. And that's where we're seeing a greater shift of a lot less talking head, as we call it, where you're sitting down with an interview, someone that is looking into the camera, and less B-roll to more B-roll and very specific pieces of that story being fed. And then, of course, in all of our projects that we do, are multi-deliverable, they have multiple deliverables in them. So we kind of think of it as having this big bucket of content. And there may be that actual 3 minute piece that's used as an explainer or something longer, maybe a presentation type thing where you have a captive audience that are forced to watch the right. entire piece. But from that, we're also serving out social media deliverables. We can generate stills and all that.
So you can repurpose that one piece of content in multiple channels.
Absolutely.
And that's that's not by accident. Everything is kind of pre-planned in order for that to be delivered.
And that all happens through our standard pre-production process. Mm-hmm. And most of that, most of our projects actually is about 60 to 70% on average is where our time is spent is during pre-production.
Really?
Yeah, because we're looking for data on where is the audience, what are the demographics, age, where are they in the country, what is going on when we're going to serve this content to them. You know, is it the middle of the winter or is it hot and, you know, thunderstorms everywhere? You know, those types of things. We really want to know where is our client going to be reaching out to those kinds of things.
Now, Steve, in the previous segment, mentioned the importance of ROI. How do you kind of come up with some sort of an ROI or the effectiveness of a video?
A lot of times, you know, we can always go to the viewership, and there's lots of ways to aggregate the data on how long did people watch it? Did they rewatch it? Are they watching it on their phone?
But how does that translate to revenue for the organization?
Right. So the answer. To your question is a question for the company today is where do their capabilities lie? It depends on the type of company that we work with, whether or not they even have the measuring instruments in place or that they're looking at the right kind of data. But where we're seeing a revenue ROI on it is when we're, say, decreasing the turnover rate with inside of a company. Mm-hmm. And large companies is where that really matters.
Right.
You can spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on making a video if you can reduce, you know, 150 people staying for another year inside the company because you're displaying the company culture. Those are the ways that we're really seeing it. But there are some ways that we're starting to see that content, you know, we've always heard over the last 5 years, content's king. And it still is, but the content is becoming much more tailored to very segmented or highly targeted audiences, whether that's on social, whether it's on Facebook, Netflix, those types of things. They are doing studies for the people that they're watching. And so a lot of organizations know, you know, who is my audience on Instagram? Some organizations just have an Instagram account and they don't know what their audience actually is. And the better performing ones, the ones with higher engagement, are always the places where you know who your audience is.
Right.
Like at Friendly Human, we know our audience on Instagram, and we have 12 to 15% engagement rates, which is 5x industry standard. But that's because we serve tailored information, tailored data to that very specific audience.
Now, what percent of Friendly Human's time is spent on doing internal videos just for yourself and your company?
So we, about this time last year, took a really big turn from what we'd always done in the past. We also do very, very little outbound marketing. And I guess really what it comes down to is we don't do any outbound marketing. We just display what we do as a company. So
what you're doing on behalf of others?
What we're doing on behalf of others. And then this time last year, we decided to start making our own content for not so much our own purpose, but just for the things that we believe in. So it's content that we are the client. And so it's allowed us to do a lot of really cool projects. We're working on finalizing and we'll be premiering our first feature-length documentary that was shot in Africa about rhino poaching later this fall in October. And we also are doing our own internal episodic series about bicycling in the southeastern United States. Just things that we're passionate about and that we think people will enjoy. We started creating that and people kind of get to see what the culture and what being a Friendly Human's like and what doing business with Friendly Human's like.
Now, you're based here in Atlanta. Do you have offices elsewhere? Because a lot of your work takes place in different locales.
Yeah, we do not have offices anywhere else. Most all of our work is done by folks in-house and they're all based here.
So they'll just travel to go to wherever the client is?
We have a lot of platinum medallion folks. We are in planes a lot. So probably 70 to 80% of our work on average is outside of the state of Georgia.
Now, you mentioned the importance of pre-production in any of the work that you do. Can you give some tips for somebody who's thinking about tackling video in-house? Because, you know, look, every phone now is a camera.
Absolutely.
There has to be ways to do it kind of, I don't want to say on the cheap, but less expensively if somebody wants to do it themselves.
Absolutely. And we're a big proponent of that. We probably, you know, just from a Friendly Human standpoint, we will push people towards that a lot of times when we're in a discovery meeting with a prospective client, because it doesn't make sense to engage an organization like us on a level of high production when they can use an iPhone or use new Android devices or buy a nice DSLR for several thousand dollars and be able to utilize that over time. So I think like one of the biggest ways of some probably three big questions that a person who wants to create their own content can ask is, what's their primary audience? You know, who am I trying to talk to? Is it a sales purpose or is it education purpose or is it culture focused and those kinds of things?
So when you make that decision, kind of go all in on that.
Right.
Don't try to do that. And I'm going to touch on the other two.
Right.
Because you only have a short period of time.
You only have a short period of time. And when you create that tailored content, you know that you're going to be resonating. Your message is going to resonate with the viewer that you actually want to make. And that also means that inside, say, one of our big Fortune 100 companies that we work with, they have many, 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 many audiences. They don't just have one audience that is, you know, a million strong. It's very segmented. And Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook has inherently kind of forced our world into that, is that there's Facebook pages now. It's not just Facebook. You know, there's Facebook groups. Well, what's the group about? That's your audience. Instagram is very, very high touch and very personalized. And so a company can have multiple 10, 20, 30 Instagram channels, because a technology person is not going to be interested in the same thing that an operations person
is interested
in. Right, or HR. Exactly. So that's where we're seeing, is that there's more and more breakup of these audiences.
The segmentation has to be taken into consideration.
Absolutely.
So now for you, what's the most rewarding part of the job?
Oh, I definitely would say getting the flexibility to pick the work that we take and work with the people that I work with every day. We're all in it for the same reason. That's to make a positive impact and change the world. Hence the name Friendly Human. You know, Friendly Human started because of not having enough humanness or friendliness in our lives. And ultimately it's led us to shoot all around the world, all over. We generally make somewhere around 1,500 north or south of that number of deliverables a year. So we're telling lots and lots of stories as a company. And that's ultimately provided the flexibility of us picking up just our own types of projects that we want to do. And Friendly Human invests in that kind of time. I've got a guy right now that's one of our DPs is out in Oklahoma chasing tornadoes with a tornado startup. You know, our CEO is in China right now doing some work in China. And I spend a lot of time in South America. And pretty much everybody on our team has something that they go and spend time and do because they want to make a positive impact on the world.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
Yeah, friendlyhuman.com. Pretty simple.
And all the social channels under Friendly Human?
Yep, they're all pretty much at Friendly Human. So everything's there and you can see our work and everything's linked on our
And
website.
You're always looking for good culture fits, right?
Absolutely. We actually have an ongoing and we're always working to develop our intern program. So, you know, if you want to get involved, that's about the easiest and quickest way. You know, we're a small team, but we love to have people come in and visit us. Our studio is down in Old Fourth Ward near Crog Street Market. For anybody in the Atlanta area is probably familiar with that.
Sure. Right on the Beltline.
Yeah, we are literally about 10 feet from the Beltline, from the backside of our parking lot. And yeah, we love to have visitors, and we're, our culture is what drives us every day.
All right. That's Justin Walker with Friendly Human. That's friendlyhuman.com. Thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me today.
All right. Next up, we got Caroline Grimes, and she is with the Friendly folks at Emory University. What is it? The Executive MBA program?
Yes, at Goizueta Business School.
All right. The Goizueta Business School. My, I have some family that are active in the Coca-Cola business. Is that the same Goizueta?
Yes, it is. Roberto C. Goizueta was probably one of the greatest business leaders of all time, and certainly in the United States. And we're very fortunate to be associated with the Goizueta Family Foundation, not the company itself that supports the school.
But it, I guess, donated a lot to be part of this, to have naming rights to the program. But that's kind of his philosophy in business, is how does somebody, when they name or the school's name for them, how much kind of philosophically are they involved in the direction of the school?
Well, he is a big proponent of education in general, and mm-hmm. as is the family. And so one of his famous sayings is, you have to be prepared for your next opportunity. And that's what business school is all about.
Right.
So there was definitely a common thread there and a meeting of the minds.
Now, can you share the difference between the MBA program, traditional, and an executive MBA program?
Yeah, they're both MBAs. So everybody's diploma reads the same. It's an MBA. You can use, for an executive MBA program, you can use either on your resume, your executive MBA or MBA, depending on the position that you're seeking and which one you feel like would resonate more with the employer. Mm-hmm. But the difference, sort of philosophically, is that executive MBA programs are designed for people that have already moved up through a particular vertical stream and have already established themselves and sort of found their niche in the professional community. But they have reached a point in their careers where they really are recognizing some holes or want to make a shift and feel the need now for an MBA.
So they've got some kind of work experience or more so than the traditional MBA.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
MBA.
So a full-time student might have 2 to 4 years of work experience. And any top MBA program is going to require some work experience.
Right.
An executive MBA student could have anywhere from 8 years work experience to, you know, 30 years work experience.
So then the classes would have a much more diverse kind of student population.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a mix in our classes of people that are sort of mid-level management that are aspiring to executive positions. And they bring in like skills of really being close to the consumer, kind of an ear to the ground and really involved in the management portions of the business.
Right.
And then the executives bring in more of a strategic approach and a little bit more perspective.
Now, is the Emory program specific to certain industries or verticals, or is it kind of a general MBA?
We are all about diversity. And so we have people from public, private, large, small, profit, nonprofit companies, and from all different vertical streams.
Now, but is the MBA that you're going to get at the end, is it like technology? Are they more technology people? They could be manufacturers. It's going to be able to serve all those industries?
It will. So actually, a lot of our technology people are looking to move into more of a business type role and move out of specificity. Mm-hmm. And that's what the MBA is about. But everybody that comes in with a different goal. There are options to specialize. And I can go into a lot of detail about that.
Yeah, what are some of the specialties?
Yeah, it's kind of changed over the years based on consumer demand.
Right.
And I think it relates back to what one of the former speakers was saying, was really being nimble and making sure that you're refreshing your curriculum. That's very important in education. And I think it's something that people should look for in a school. But since the financial crisis in 2008, we've really seen less company sponsorship for programs and more students are self-funding.
Oh, so before maybe 10 years ago, it used to be that the companies, that'd be one of the perks in the company is that they'll pay for their MBA program.
Not 100% of the time and maybe not 100% of the program, but there was definitely more sponsorship involved. And now there's very little. Most of our students are self-funded. And so as a result, you know, they have a stronger voice in what they like to see in the program. And over time, what we've recognized is that people really want to be able to sort of specialize in a particular area that's going to help their particular career. And so in the past, most executive MBA programs were kind of viewed as lockstep general management curriculum, and you moved through on a sort of regulated schedule. Now, the first probably 3/5 of our program is sort of that format. You're getting very grounded theory and application from core curriculum. But then you, starting in the second term, have an option to start specializing either in finance or strategy or leadership.
But that's a player's choice. They can pick whatever.
It's their choice, absolutely. And you can pick more than one area of specialty. Most of our executive MBA students are really interested in the strategy piece because that's the difference between sort of mid-level management and top management and can really help get them in there. And if they don't have any finance background, that's another really popular one too.
Mm-hmm. So now, is this something that takes 2 years to complete? What's the length of time to get an executive MBA?
We have two formats. And so one is from September to May the following year. So it's about 19 to 20 months. Mm-hmm. And then we have, that was the weekend format. And then the modular format starts in November to May. So it's more like 17 months.
Okay, so one is only weekend?
It's Fridays and Saturdays, both days, all day, 8 to 5:30 every other week. And then the modular program is a week at a time, about every 8 to 10 weeks.
And then that's in the evening?
No, it's all day also.
Mm-hmm. So it's Friday and Saturday is the same for each of them?
Friday and Saturday for the weekend program, 8 to 5:30.
Right.
And then for the modular program, Sunday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5:30 for those weeks. And that's our most senior MBA program.
So now how do they do that while working?
They are at a level usually at their organization where they can either have heavy weigh-in on their schedule or it works for them. So people that travel internationally, professionally, couldn't do a weekend program probably. Right. And so this program works well for them. Also, physicians who work on rotations, you know, there's a niche market out there that this format is perfect for.
Mm-hmm. And then can you take us through like what's a typical, like that's a long time in the classroom.
It is.
Like what does the day look like?
So they start their day usually around 7 with breakfast. All your meals are catered in.
So they don't have to leave. So then it's focused.
Correct. So breakfast is right there. Then they walk over to class and are there 8 to 12 for their first session.
And that's everybody.
That's so
like,
the whole class.
There could be 20, 30 people. Like what's a class size?
Well, the weekend program is about 45 to 55 students. And the modular program is about 30 students usually.
So it's 30 to 50 students in a room, mm-hmm. a classroom, one classroom.
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah. Which actually is a really great number. It gives plenty of time for people to raise their hand and share their expertise mm-hmm. on a topic, but also for the faculty to facilitate.
And then so once they start, they just go straight through or it's in chunks of...
They have an hour and a half for lunch and we have speakers and workshops and things like that that are going on during lunch. A lot of people do their team meetings and then the next class is 1:30 to 5:30. So it's pretty intense when you're there, but you know, everybody's in it together and it's a kind of fire hose effect, but it's also a lot of fun.
And I know somebody that just recently went through it and what they liked is that it's like you said, it's kind of, they're all in it together. They form a kind of a group.
Yeah.
And they work together because there's a lot of projects where they have to work together.
They'll definitely be on a team as with most MBA programs and the teams change every semester. So one of the important parts of the program is to refine
and network really because now you're meeting other kind of people in the same level as you are.
You will never again be in a room with so many talented professional people from such a diverse background.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's one of the main benefits of
it
going through the program.
Is. So crafting the class is extremely important.
And then now what about to get in? What are the requirements to get in?
What we're looking for in students is people that have a significant amount of experience in a particular area. So somebody that hasn't jumped around a lot, somebody that has moved up, somebody that is very clear on what their goals are, because if you don't know your goals, it's very hard for us to help you reach them. And somebody that's willing to share from their experience with the class as well as to learn from others. We also really like to recruit nice people.
But is this like a GPA thing? Am I going to have to break out my transcripts from 20
years ago? We do need your transcripts. Yeah, we will need those transcripts. There are things that we'll do to help you prepare. Because our students have been out of school for a while.
Right.
But it's important for us to see that, you know, you have a good solid degree behind you. It's a very quantitatively rigorous program. And so we need some sort of, background on that.
Now, so what are the tests to go through that? Don't you have to take a pre-test, like an SAT?
Yeah, there is a standardized test. But for the executive MBA program, we do accept applications for a waiver. And so we'll do sort of an analysis on particular elements of your background, your transcripts, your resume, and really evaluate basically what we're looking for there is your quantitative skills.
Now, what about are entrepreneurs kind of penalized because they're not in a big corporate?
No, we love entrepreneurs. In fact, entrepreneurship is one of the pillars of the school. And so we get entrepreneurs from all around the country that are participating in the program. And we have an amazing entrepreneurship faculty that helps people. And a lot of our students take that route.
Now, what about the alumni network?
Yeah.
Do you get to plug into the Emory alumni network?
Absolutely. As soon as you become a student, you gain access. And our most engage students, really reach out proactively to the network and meet them for coffee, start expanding their network. Because as you may know, about 80% of future jobs are built on networking.
Right. Now, there seems to be a lot of local MBA and executive MBA programs here in Atlanta. How does Emory's differ? Like, what makes the Emory special in your mind?
There, we're one of the few private universities. It's a nonprofit, and so all of our funding comes, you know, from our tuition, but it also serves to make a very robust offering for our students. So some of the things that we do are things that you'll see on most programs, but if you dig deeper and find out what it is that we do in those particular areas, you'll start to see the difference. And one of the things is our leadership. Our dean of leadership is a retired lieutenant general from the U.S. Army, Ken Keene. And so he has built some strong partnerships with Fort Benning, and we use sort of their leadership training to enhance our leadership training. Mm-hmm. Also, some of the things that he learned in the military, like after action reviews and really reflecting back on, you know, what happened in your team aspect and what you can do better. A lot of Emory's instruction is based on a holistic approach. And so really knowing yourself better and how you react under stress, how you react in normal situations, really improves your performance on teams. And that gets noticed at work, and that helps you to advance in your career. Also, our Career Management Center is very, has a lot of in-depth resources. We have three people that are specifically dedicated to our working professionals. They do enormous amounts of content for our students and also individual meetings, days, nights, weekends. Like, they're very accessible, as are our faculty. So I think there are a lot of things that are built in. We have a number of immersions. Some programs just do one and they go to the same place year after year, which is great. We go all around the world, visit companies all around the world. We do technology trips. We do international trips. We do Washington, D.C. trips. There's a lot of learning that takes place. And a lot of it is elective-based. So if you can't get the time off from work, you know, you don't have to go on those, but there are opportunities that are there for you.
Right. Yeah. If you're going to do this, you should kind of go
dive
all in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So now it's graduation time of year. Anything that you're most proud of that's been accomplished this year in the program?
You know, from where I sit, what I'm proud of always is our students, because we bring in people that are already amazing and they know where they want to go. And just watching the successes that we have, some of our success stories, we have a woman who is now the CFO at SunTrust. She graduated several years ago. When she started the program, she was working in private wealth and wanted to study strategy. And she knew exactly what she wanted to do, and she's done it. We have another woman that has transitioned from position. Now she's creating a product, which is an in-home strep test, mm-hmm. which can really change the lives of people all around the country. We have people that have learned how to start their own businesses, learned how to invest their money, have started side businesses with some of their colleagues from class. And so just watching what people do with what they've learned. And, you know, it's funny, I had a student reach back to me recently saying, you know, I just want to thank you and Koizueta for everything I learned, because he had just gotten this great new role at a new company here in Atlanta. And I said, you know, we give you the tools, and at the end of the day, it's up to you what you're going to do with them. And you have put it together. So I just love to see what they've accomplished.
So now it is near graduation, or
yeah, graduation is next Monday.
Week. Mm-hmm. So when can people apply again, or is that an rolling?
Oh, it's ongoing.
It's rolling.
We're getting ready to approach a deadline May 15th. Mm-hmm. We do have an online information session over lunch next Wednesday that I'll be running, and people are welcome to tune in for that. Our next deadline, I said it's May 15th, and we have another one on July 1st. So there's still plenty of time to enroll. I definitely recommend anybody who's considering an MBA to check it out. At least know all of your options here in Atlanta.
Right. And if somebody wanted to check it out, what's the coordinates for that?
www.goizueta.emory.edu. Goizueta is G-O-I-Z-U-E-T-A.
Good stuff. Well, thank you, Carolyn Grimes, for being part of the show today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks to all the guests today, and Katie Galley, our producer. As always, this is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.